This recording is a production of Anabaptist Financial. More recordings are available on our website at www.afweb.org under the Resources menu or by calling 800-653-9817. This presentation was recorded at a business seminar held on September 16, 2025 in East Earl, Pennsylvania.
Well, good afternoon. I do really count it an honor and a privilege to be here. It has been a very good, worthy day of being here, listening to all the other sessions. And when I saw that they gave me the opportunity to talk about numbers, and they gave me the opportunity to do it in the middle of the afternoon, I knew I had a tall task ahead of me of trying to talk about numbers and not letting it get boring and not putting you all to sleep. And I figured if I might sing the numbers, I know none of you would sleep, but I'm not going to do that because that would be awful. And so God did give me the gift to speak, and so I want to talk about this. And so first, I'd like to start out with this. I've never seen it done in a crowd before, but I was like, I think I'm going to do it here because I'm really curious. And so when we look at all these people that are out here, there's a certain group of people that you know who you are. And that is, and I want to recognize you here because I don't think that group of people ever gets recognized, and I'd like to see how many of them are here. That is, if you are the type of person that you get energized in the morning when you wake up and you get a cup of coffee and you cannot wait to go to your desk and do numbers and reconcile your checkbook, stand up. I want to see you. Come on. Stand up. You know who you are. If you love numbers and you can't wait to wake up in the morning and go do that, look. No, stay standing. Don't just go up and down. I want to recognize you all because all the rest of you notice there is people out there like that, but it's not a lot. And then I thought to myself, yeah, go to GaimanAccounting.com/careers. I had to throw that in there, so if you don't have anything else to do. But notice, now we should make all the rest of you stand, but you don't need to. But if you notice, there is people that are gifted in this, but then there's people that aren't as gifted in the numbers. The numbers actually de-energize them. It makes them go sour and sad and things with that. So as we look at this, there's lots of you. So I'm not talking to just that specific group that likes numbers. I know there's the rest of you that numbers make you sigh and you're not sure what to do with them. But today we're going to tackle this afternoon. We're going to try to keep you awake, try to keep you energized on this and not let you have to doze off and things with it as we tackle accurate accounting and why it matters. And because I knew it's going to be off balance a little bit like that, I'm not going to dive as deep into the numbers with that to try to keep the attention. I don't want to bore you and things with that, but to give you some of the things to take along with that. So for me as a detailed person that can go on and on and on and on about the detail and annoy all the rest of you that didn't stand, when I prepare for this, and I think I showed you this before, when I go to prepare with this, this is kind of my motto that I say, Holy Spirit, help me to keep it simple, son. How do I keep this kind of subject matter simplistic so that you all can gather this? And this has been a quote that I put together as I look at this is, wisdom is understanding and applying the simple things of life. So I keep asking as I tackle this subject here today, accurate accounting and why it matters, how can I keep this simplistic so that the rest of you that didn't stand can maybe learn something from this, understand this, and those of you that did stand that love those numbers in detail can figure out to how to actually keep things simple in life. So tackling this subject matter, accurate accounting and why it matters. So one of the things that we got is we got a lot of detailed people that can make things complex. And so we want to know what we can do with accounting. And so I first want to go through and to talk a little bit about why would accurate numbers matter. And so I'm doing something here in this presentation. If you want to take notes, I have some of the other things that we're going to go through with numbers. But in there, you'll find that I've got like 7 quotes that I spent time and worked on that I'm going to be sharing with you. So I took a lot of my thoughts and I put them down together into little some simplistic quotes for you to ponder on. So to answer that question, accurate accounting and why it matters, the first quote that we have that I put together is, "Instinct may guide you, but it's the numbers that give you the confidence to act." Let that sink in a little bit for some of you all. Instinct may guide you, but it's the numbers that give you the confidence to act. Another terminology for instinct may be you just had that gut feeling. And there's probably many of you in business that you go and do something and you just have the gut feeling, this is the right thing to do. Your gut's telling you should do that. Or there's also that feeling of when your instinct is telling you, you better not do that. You may not know why, but your gut is telling you that your gut can guide you. But you can get into situations where your gut can tell you one way, but you're just not sure. And so you're incapable of making a decision, even though your gut's telling you what you think you should do. You're unable to make a decision because you're just not sure if you should trust your gut. And that is when the numbers can give you the confidence to act. I'm going to give you another explanation of a story. You may have heard this from me before because it's one of my favorite ones, but I put it together this way. We're going to talk about a young man named Jehu, and Jehu loved chariots. And Jehu loved to drive his chariots fast and reckless and ferocious. And he was well known all across the community about driving his chariots. And not only did Jehu love to drive his chariots, but Jehu loved to build chariots for the community. And it was a community service that he offered to his community of building these wonderful, beautiful chariots that would withstand the reckless driving that the community young folks loved to do. But Jehu's gut was telling him something wasn't quite right with his business. So he decided that he's going to get a business advisor to work with. And as the first meeting that he met with the advisor, Jehu, in his recklessness and his energy and his passion for what he's doing, before the advisor could even speak, Jehu says to the advisor, "Look," he said, "I need help and I want help, but my chariots are for the community. It's a community event, it's a community purpose, and you will not tell me to go up in sales." The advisor said, "Well, that's fine. That's not a problem. Let's look at your numbers, Jehu." So the advisor went over Jehu's numbers and his chariot business and came down to the bottom and was like, "Jehu, with everything that you did for the month, you lost $500. And Jehu goes, "Well, that's not good." So they wrapped up the phone call the next month, got into the phone call, and the advisor went over Jehu's numbers and things with him the next month. Got to the end of the phone call and was like, "Jehu, after you built all these chariots for the community and things, you've lost $500 again." Jehu goes back the third month. I'm sorry, the previous month, on the second one, the Jehu was like, to the advisor, he looks at him and makes this profound statement. "So you mean to tell me, if I just keep doing what I'm doing, every month I will continue to lose $500. And his advisor was, "Yeah." And that was the end of the conversation. The third one, the minute that Jehu got on the phone, Jehu's first words were, Mr. Advisor, I have to tell you, I went up in my prices. See, isn't it interesting that once you know where you are at and you understand what is your numbers are truly showing you and what the result of that is going to be, then suddenly somebody has the strength and confidence to make decisions that their gut probably was telling them that they should make. Jehu knew that he probably should be a little higher price to cover where his things were, but it gets sticky if you're making chariots for a community and it's kind of a community service and where should I be or what should I be do for the community. It can be conflicting and you don't know what to do with your gut unless you know exactly what your numbers are, because it's not sustainable to keep running a loss. You know, month after month after month, you're slowly going to bleed out and have to go ask somebody for more money or find a way to supplement it. So it is very important that we have accurate numbers and that we can understand them. We're not going to go into the debacles of so many companies that have happened because of inaccurate numbers, fraudulent numbers and things like that. But to really know where your numbers are at for your company. So coming back, I want to talk about a little bit about a P&L. And if you go to your handout that is there, you will see that I put in a very simplistic P&L that I want to go over with you. What I have found is that it's challenging for detailed people. We want lots of details, and so I've had to work over the years trying to make something simplistic. This is a very simplistic P&L that we use. This is straight out of my advising division that we use for the companies that we work with. And this is what I look at, and so I just put this in here that we can go over just to get a little bit of an explanation of a profit and loss. A profit and loss. A P&L is a little bit like a speedometer in a car. The profit and loss does not tell you your GPS coordinates as to where you're at. It tells you how fast you're going from point A to point B. The balance sheet is what tells you the coordinates. The balance sheet is what tells you where you're at in a period of time. A profit and loss is like your speedometer that tells you how quickly that you're getting somewhere. So as we go down through, let's take a brief look at the P&L. At the top, we have sales. Sales is what we are generating from our business that's coming in. We have sales that come in. A very common question I get is, what percentage should your net income be in a business? What is a healthy net income for a business? And my response always is it just depends what you're in and doing. If someone's selling a $1.2 million piece of equipment that takes a 30-minute phone call to sell it and they make 0.5% on it, that could be a very good business, but the percentage is way off. And you have somebody that's out sweating, working, and using a push mower and mowing grass, and it's all service revenue. You know, your margins can be different. So with sales, it is what you got coming in, and the business models can be completely different. But sales is your revenues that you have coming in to that company, and there can be all different types of that. The second one that you'll see there is the cost of goods sold. Cost of goods sold is what it takes for the product or things that you're selling. And a service business, such as an accounting firm, does not actually have a cost of goods sold. So there's some of you all that have a business that don't really have a direct cost of goods because you're not actually selling something. Some of you are in a business of resale where you buy something and you just resell it. Then the next one is in the business of manufacturing where you buy all these oodles of components, you put them together, and then you sell something. The idea of a profit and loss is you recognize your income and then you're looking for your cost of goods sold that is there. What is it cost for the goods that go into what I'm selling? you're in the shed industry, what type of 2x4s and lumber and siding, roofing, what are those direct cost of goods that we put in there? The next one is the other cost of goods sold, and that can be miscellaneous things. You get into some companies, sometimes you got subcontract services, so you sub something out, and it's a subcomponent that we split out with that. But the first thing that I go to when someone's at a P&L is trying to get an understanding on your P&L. What is your gross profit margin? If you're building widgets and you're selling them, what is your cost of goods? That's what a P&L is trying to tell you. What type of margin do you have on that? Like, for example, somebody that does manufacturing, typically their material cost may be 50%. You take it times two, that's what the selling price is. They got a 50% margin, you know, on that. So a P&L is telling you what your sales are, what your direct costs are, and then what your gross profit margin is. And I try to keep things simple, and that is our communities, as soon as sales slow down, they don't generally fire employees. They have them sweeping the shop and things, and so I don't do this complex maneuvering of putting payroll into the cost of goods, although that is the educational institution way of probably doing it properly. I don't do that because you all don't. When sales go down, it seems like payroll doesn't automatically go down. So there's a disconnect. So I like to see them separate from that. So we look at our gross profit margin, and that gives us the gross profit is what is your dollars. And I say that a lot of companies get distorted because you don't know what your dollars are or what your money is that you really have, because you may be doing millions and millions in sales, but it's just passing through because of the volume you have with cost of goods sold. If you do $1 million piece of machinery and you make just a little piece on that, you may only have $50,000 off of that entire sale. There can be a lot of money coming in out of your account, but what portion of that is yours? Versus a service industry, 100% of that money could be yours. That's the first part of a P&L to say who's the money. The next part of the P&L is, what is your, I call it the overhead expenses. What are those expenses that are there to operate in your company? You have your payroll. That is the biggest one that you've got with payroll. What are your payroll costs in the company? You know, looking at that. And then this is where we do this just to try to get an idea, because again, I see it all the time. You hit print on these P&Ls, and out comes about 6, 8, 9, 10 pages of P&L where they're trying to keep track of everything, grouping it into an area of knowing what are expenses that are fixed. Like a rent payment is going to be fixed every single month. That's not going to change. You may have other things, supplies and things. Man, they may be 1 month, they'll be way up, way down. These are things that vary. Like to see a breakdown to try to group them in with the overhead on some of that detail. Then the third one is debt. You know, what is the debt for the company? And this is one that has been challenging for a lot of people when they do P&Ls, especially when interest rates were so low. Interest cost was very, very small. What I like to see on a P&L is put in your entire loan payment so you actually know if you're making enough money to meet your debt obligations, because that principal has to be paid to the bank. So you got your debt that's coming in. And oh yes, don't forget that as an owner, you have to take a salary too. So we need your owner's salary that is in there. And when we get all through with that, you get down to the bottom where you get a profit and loss. The profit and loss, the bottom line there, is what's telling you, like a speedometer, how fast are you going? How quickly will you get somewhere? If you make those dollars for 10 months, how much will you have? Or what percentage are you making? You can look there at the percentages of that. So I've given you a very simplistic model that I've worked a long, long time to try to whittle it down to a very simplistic P&L. And as a result of that, the next quote that I have for you is, simplified numbers lead to sharper decisions. I just see this so many times that when the numbers come out of an accounting system, or you get the numbers, and they, like, you know, when people pass the reports around at a board meeting, and us detail people pass it around, we think it's better by the pound. As we send it out, that it's more impressive. But what I've realized is that the more simplistic that you can get it for those that didn't stand, the easier it is for them to do things. And hence, I have that simplified numbers lead to much sharper decisions. When you can look at the simple things of that. So I'll use this as an example. I'm curious. How many of you know what your total payroll cost was for last month, including payroll taxes, payroll insurance, your admin payroll, your production payroll, yes, all of your payroll. Is there anybody here that actually knows what that number was last month? There's a few. What I find interesting is that just kind of that I've got so frustrating over the years is the way that accountants do it is you print on that P&L, and when that P&L comes running out, you have to go to the cost of goods section for some payroll, and then you got office payroll, you got admin payroll, you got production wages, you got payroll taxes, you got workers' comp, and you're somehow supposed to make a decision and say, are we in line payroll? Are we in line with our payroll? So where if you have simplified numbers, it leads to sharper decision. If you just roll that all up into one payroll number, like we can see on the report here, I'll just go back. We can see that one there where you got payroll. Last year, it was 90,000. I'm sorry, this was the year to date. I want to go to the comparison here. If we drop it into the comparison that we have on your next page, you can flip to the next page, you can see that the year-to-date with payroll, you can see that the year-to-date with payroll, in the bottom section, we had payroll that was $90,954. Last year was $72,000. We had an increase of 19.6%. I'm sorry, 25.9 or $18,729. I know the print is a little bit small in there on that, but we got it all on one page. So this is where when you roll your numbers up to something simplistic and more simple, it's much easier to understand and to know that when people are looking at it, are my things in line? And so this is what we use a lot with our advising team, and it makes me chuckle too because people are like, well, do you really want to show everybody here what you use? And then I just chuckle because I'm like, the reality is, you may think like, wow, this is so simplistic. Yeah, try working 2 years in a programmer and figuring out how to make it that simple, that I'm really not worried about any of you detailed people ever coming up with something this simple. Because you will not be able to get past your detailed self to make it simplistic that you can give it to that energetic person that doesn't care about numbers. And he's like, what? Payroll's too high. We better go have some meetings. It's too simplistic. But that really is, I have a gentleman I call my business dad that ran a lot of businesses that showed that. So you need to have the accurate numbers that you can make decisions off of them. But again, just going back to that quote, simplified numbers lead to sharper decisions. And that's what I want to emphasize. Yes, they must be accurate, but to get simplistic numbers. And it's so hard for us as detailed people to be simplistic with our numbers. So if we look at some of these things here that we have with our numbers, you can see where it is. If we start taking our simple numbers for the year and comparing them to the previous year. So if you look at the bottom side of that, you can see some very simplistic things. And I know it's small print. Again, I apologize for that. But like with the sales, you can see that it's 17% ahead of sales, running ahead of where it was last year. You can see that payroll is up. You get some simple numbers. You can do some things. Here's a key number that's good to look at. If you need your bifocals out, get them out for you and look at the payroll. Year to date, it's 21.1%. Last year was 19.6%. So if you turn it into some percentages and look at the percentages, accurate numbers will say, we did more business, but if our payroll was to stay in line percentage-wise, we're actually running a little bit stronger in payroll than where we were previously on the model. So that can give you some of the good insight into what you are doing with that and know where you're at and what is happening. And of course, you always have the bottom line when you get to it to look at and see where and how much profit that you're making at with it. But remember, I said simplified numbers lead to sharper decisions. One of the key things that you need to be able to is when you do identify an issue, you do need the detail. You do need to be able to go find the answers to it. But remember, you don't need the answers before there's even a question. Detailed people like to give everything, but wait for the detail till you really actually need to go get it when you have the accurate numbers. So you can see on the slide up here, if you find that line where variable expenses are, we can see if we compare that year to date, we're running a little bit ahead on our variable expenses, and we want to know why. So now when you got a why and you want to know your answer, that's when you need to be able to go digging. And if you go to the next page that you'll see, this is the report that I have built or used, you can go see that detail. This is all the underlying accounts to variable expenses that you can see. So as you look at them, you can see up on the slide, I don't think yours is in color, but you can see the red and the greens, because you may be over or under on a specific account, but there may be underlying line items that cause that. So it is also important that you have the support to be able to go look at that later when you need that and to dig into it. So we can go in and look at those variable expenses and see line by line where and how we actually got to where we have a little more expense there with that. So when you look at your P&L, you need to be able to find out those answers and those things with that. So it is very important that you know and have the accurate numbers. Again, I'll just back up to this again. Instinct may guide you, but it's the numbers that give you the confidence to act. And I'll say this again, probably one of the toughest things in a company is to let an employee go that you no longer have business for. That is hard. And if you want to see a detailed person produce analytics, tell a detailed person you don't have enough revenue to keep this employee, and they will do spreadsheet after spreadsheet to try to justify keeping somebody they can't afford because of the emotional side of that. But if you get down and you look and you have the accurate numbers that show you that, hey, your business, your sales have shrank, and you can no longer sustain these employees, you have to let somebody go. And those are hard. And if you have the accurate numbers, it gives you that confidence to act. The other thing is, if your cost of goods gets way out of line and things with that, you then have the confidence to go act on that. So enough on the P&L. We're going to jump into the side of it, and that is moving in, because the clock keeps rolling, going into the side of budgeting. So budgets are a fun one to tackle, and so I put this together for a quote. A strong budget begins with a clear overview. Details come second. And from personal experience, what usually happens in the preparation of a budget? What usually happens in the preparation of a budget is you can't see the forest because of the trees, and you start doing a budget in such utter detail that you completely get lost in the detail, and you try to figure out all the detail, and the end result is you never end up adding your numbers up, and you never even have a budget because you never built up to the top because you got mired down in the details. That is why I was saying here, a strong budget begins with a clear overview. So what I propose to you is when you're thinking of a budget, start at the top And here is a very simplified budget worksheet. If you're going to start at the top, start to think about it. What is just your total sales? What are you going to budget for the total sales? Instead of trying to build up what it is, what you know, that can be as simple as doing, we're going to do a percentage over last year. We're going to be a little bit more, or however you want to do that, but start at the top. And if you look at these categories here, instead of going into the details, do a rough budget at a top level. And then from that top level, you can start going down into the details. So let's just say, for example, a simple budget, you say, you know what, our growth is going to be 10% in sales. So that means if we did 1 million, we're now going to do 1.1. Okay. After you kind of decide that, and now you go into your sales revenue sides, then which division needs to do what to meet that 10% increase? You then can go down into the detail. But I would encourage you, those of you that are not numbers, it's not too hard to just take what I've given you here, the 9 categories, and be like, what's my sales going to be? What's my percentage of the cost of goods sold going to be on that? That'll give me a rough gross profit margin of this. Anticipate a rough payroll of this, my variable, some fixed, owner's salary, debt. And with that increase, well, I have a profit or loss at the bottom. And work it out at the high level. And then from that, you can keep going into the detail and building out the detail and things with it. I know budgets are touted a lot, but from a personal experience, it's hard to get people to do budgets and to work with budgets. And one of the things I want to talk about is some intangibles with a budget. You are a steward of the things you have, not the things you don't have. Think about that a little bit. Too often when we do a budget, we tend to think about what are we going to get next year that we don't already have. And so as you process that, a budget is not just how are we going to grow, but how are we going to be the best steward of what we already have. Too often business owners think that I can get out of this or next year is going to be different because I'm going to have more. Be a steward of what you already have before you just go for more. So take that into account when you put a budget together of, are you trying to be a steward of something that you really don't have yet, or should you be a steward of what you do have? Then this is a sample on the next page of, if you do have a budget, you can take your budget and do your comparisons, compare it to the budget, do the same analysis, where am I over budget, under budget? You can have fun doing all of those budgets and things with that. That's all I'm going to talk about largely with budgets. I want to go into a few other things here and wrap up, and I brought you some bonus content that I want to talk about here and wrap up. But I want to just touch on this a little bit. And I want to listen to this quote. When goals become the focus, it can breed complacency and discouragement. When organizational health is prioritized, growth becomes inevitable. I struggle with budgets, and I think a lot of people do, because we don't know what to do with them. You know, how much are we going to grow? Am I a steward of that? What we should do? And this recently, I have really, really been processing growth in relation to goals and things of that. And I'd like to give you a little bit of an example of young Johnny. Young Johnny is a little boy that's 6 years old. He has wonderful parents, and his parents are obsessed with goals. They think Johnny must grow 1.25 inches every year because that's what ChatGPT said a child should grow. That is what the doctor has said. Because of his body mass index and things, he should grow exactly 1.25 inches every year. And so every week they pull Johnny out of bed, they put him by the post, and they look at him and they measure him. And he's like, I'm not quite at his goal. He's not getting there. Dad, what are we going to do? Johnny's not growing to what we think he is. He's not hitting the 1.2. And the year comes to an end, and Johnny didn't meet his goal. He grew 1 inch. And there's discouragement because Johnny didn't grow and meet the goal. Or the next year, Johnny was supposed to grow his 1.25 inches, and at the end of the year, by 3 months in, Johnny had grown already 2 inches. And they're like, whoo, he's far exceeded the goal. Let's get him more donuts. We don't have to feed him healthy anymore. He's far exceeded that. So notice that you can breed complacency and or discouragement depending how obsessed you become with the goals. Look at the bottom section that when I put it here, when you put budgets and the future together, when organizational health is prioritized, growth becomes inevitable. What if Johnny's parents just left go of the goals and said, we're going to feed Johnny well. We're going to make sure that he has good meals. We're going to make sure that he has his vitamins and supplements. And at the end of every year, we're going to see if he grew. Because guess what? You won't believe this. I was 5'6" when I got my driver's license. And now I'm 6'1". So at 16, from 16 to the age of 18, I grew over 6-7 inches, I think. That was when my growth spurt hit. Sometimes we get obsessed with goals, and when the growth actually happens, and depending when the organizational health is, it doesn't always line up with our goals. And so I process that, and I just give that out to you for you to process of, be careful with goals. What if we focus on our businesses being healthy and growth being the result of a healthy company to what we can handle? Because COVID came along and blew all of our budgets and things. It was an excessive time, and we may have a pullback that's going to change that. But are our organizations healthy? For the last little bit here, bonus content. If you go into your handouts, I'm on budgets. I agree with that, but this is the bonus content that I want to give you that I unfortunately nobody teaches, nobody shows you on this, but I think this is the most key part of accurate numbers and running a business is to understand where is a company's break-even point. How much do I have to do in sales in order to know that I can have all of my bills paid? How far am I ahead or behind the break-even? Because once you actually know that, there's a sense of your gut may be telling you that, but when you actually see it, you actually get a lot more confidence or peace of like, I'm okay. Or, oh boy, that's terrible. Or what is it going to take? How far do I have to cut? How far do I have to grow? And so if you look at this, you can see where the red number is, and the clock keeps spinning quickly, so we don't have lots of time to go over this. But if you look at that red number, this business year to date, the reason that I like to look at this with a break even, and all I'm doing here in a break even is just back your sales down and your cost of goods sold down and your gross profit, back it down until your profit goes to zero. If you just back it down until it goes to zero, how much can you lose in sales until you have no profit? That is your break-even point. And of course, you need to make sure all your costs and everything are in there. That tells you what your break-even is. If you have those accurate numbers, now you have a test of the health of your company. And this is a fun number here. Look at this business here, 14.5%. So this sample company here that we used with these sample numbers, if sales dip by 14.5%, nobody got laid off, all debt got paid, owner's salary got paid, everybody would get paid, there just wouldn't be anything left over. So you look at that and say, if my business dropped 20%, I'm in trouble. Because 20%, I'm going to be losing money, and I'm going to have to start slashing costs and things with that. So you look at that as kind of a recession proof. Where am I at? What can I do with that? That also allows you to make a lot of decisions. What should I do in the future? If I know that I have the extra money, It tells me what I could give, what I can invest in, what I can do with. And that led me to this quote in relation to break even. Break even clarity leads to opportunity certainty. Opportunity keeps knocking at a business person's door. You have the opportunity to do things, but you don't know, should I, shouldn't I? But if you know where your break even is, you know whether that you can actually do it easily or that you can't do it, because you know where you are from the break even side of things. And the final one is, I got to share with you Gaiman Accounting's favorite motto: it's easy once you know how. Thank you, and God bless you.